The question was asked, what does it mean when people won't eat a specific hechsher or they only eat a specific hechsher? And I think we have to address the question on a few different fronts. So let's start very broadly. Let's begin with the fact that about 50, 60 years ago, the Reform and Conservative movement decided they're entering the field of giving hechsher, even though their constituents aren't usually so careful about whether what they eat is kosher or not. They decided that's a field they're entering. From our vantage point, being that they don't go with traditional Judaism, so their authorization is irrelevant. It makes no difference if they authorize something as kosher or not. We can't trust them because they don't go with tradition. I mean, they'll feed you swordfish. You know, they're not working based on tradition. So at the end of the day, that's not something which will be a part of our discussion. We also have to discern between Europe versus Israel. Inhabited the United States, you know, a United States where you have Jewish populaces, or the places where you're no man's land. You know, you go to South Bend, Indiana. I don't know if you have a Jewish community there. I don't know if you're going to find so much kosher food there. So Starkist tuna has an OU, as far as I know, throughout the world. But there are other food items which are not so easily available once you leave the areas that have a high Jewish population. So we have to discern between those two areas, meaning people who live in Europe will very often have a communal list of which foods are kosher, where the rabbis or the rabbinic boards will verify which foods have only kosher ingredients. And even though there isn't a hechsher per se on those foods, it's fairly common that people in much of Europe will eat that, and that's fine because they verified that that's kosher. When I was a child growing up, so Kellogg's cereal didn't have a hechsher, but everyone knew that Kellogg's cereal was kosher and everyone ate it. Today they have a hechsher, and if they don't have a hechsher, you have to be worried about it. I remember when Kellogg started having marshmallows in their cereal, and everyone was used to eating Kellogg's, and suddenly your Kellogg's had gelatin in it because they had marshmallows. So that was a new thing. I remember when people would eat maple syrup without a hechsher. And then it became clear that part of the process of producing the maple syrup, they would coat with lard. So suddenly you have a halachic issue with eating maple syrup without a hechsher. So the technology of food has evolved. And as such, we've become more stringent in our attempts to only eat food that has a hechsher. But this is a new problem and a new solution. Up until 30 years ago or 40 years ago, people would readily eat things without a hechsher because the engineering of food was far less complex. So if you bought milk, you knew what you were buying. Today, if it doesn't say 100% milk, it's not 100% milk. You know, they say vitamin A and D milk. They're injecting vitamin A and D into your milk. When you buy orange juice, unless it says 100% pure, it's not just orange juice. There's a lot more going into it. When you buy bread here in Israel, there are about 30, 40 ingredients in that bread. It's not just flour and water. There's a lot of additives. So food has become much more complex. And as such, our need for hechsherim has become greater. Our need for halachic supervision over the food is greater. Nonetheless, in Europe, certain foods are known to be kosher. And we respect that. We have the blessing that we live in a place where it's easier, where we have the foods that we want readily available with the hechsher. So our discussion will focus on Israel and places in Europe and the U.S. where hechsherim are readily available. That's not to be a given, meaning food without a hechsher in Israel is different than food without a hechsher in other places in the world. So let's just quantify our discussion. So here in Israel, when we start discussing hechsherim, there are really two major differences between the different kashrus organizations. One point is in their policies, meaning some kashrus organizations are going to be more stringent as far as their policies. whether they require certain stringencies pertaining to foods. Let's take an example. If you want bug-free lettuce, so how stringent do you have to be to ensure that your lettuce is bug-free? Is it enough to check 1 out of 10, 1 out of 100, 1 out of 1,000? So I'm making the differences very big, but I'm saying you understand there could be differences. And in certain food items, even the badatz only checks 10%. When it comes to peanuts, the badatz checks approximately 10% of the peanuts that get sold under their hechsher. And maybe even less than that. So it depends on the food item. And again, one area of difference is in their positions, meaning what stringencies they'll apply and not. Let's take another example. If a shochet is standing on a line and birds come down the line and he's slaughtering birds, so slaughtering birds requires strength and skill and focus. How many birds can he slaughter in a minute and will consider it still kosher? So the different kashrus organizations have their limits. The more stringent ones will minimize the number of birds he can slaughter in a minute or in an hour. Now, that makes a difference. Imagine that the line is running. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You know, he's supposed to slaughter bird after bird. He has to be very meticulous to ensure that when he's cutting with the sharpness of the blade. He's not pushing the blade. So obviously they get used to it, but at what rate can they work? So that's a major difference between the different kashrus organizations. How fast the line can go when a shochet checks. And there are more differences. I'm saying these are examples. So one major difference between the different kashrus organizations is the policies. There's another difference, and that's in regards to the actual oversight. How well do they check things? How careful are they? How learned are their staff that checks that something is kosher? How meticulous are they? So in the area of the policies, obviously the hechsherim that are considered more stringent, well, they're more stringent in their policies. In the area of oversight, they will claim that they are more stringent. In fact, that's not so obvious. There were cases when the top badatz sold mushrooms with worms, and the rabbanut caught the worms. Didn't happen once, happened twice. So people were buying badatz that was ostensibly under the oversight of Rav Eliashiv, and they were eating worms, big worms. And the same is true of other problems. So in the area of oversight, it's a little difficult to say that one is better than the other. They like to claim that they're better, but that's not so obvious. There's a lot of competition, and they'll claim we show up more often, but then the question is, what do your people do when they show up? You know, if the person who is overseeing, for example, by a badatz, he keeps Rabbeinu Tam because he's super stringent. So then what's the earliest hour that he's going to show up to check if a factory was open on Shabbos? The earliest time he could show up is about 2 to 3 hours after sunset. The staff of the Rabbanut, they're not waiting 72 minutes after sunset. 35 minutes after sunset, they could be hopping into a car, right? So then they could be there 45 minutes to an hour after sunset. And I know Rav Eitan Zatzal, he was in charge of the rabbinate in the south for a period. And every Matzei Shabbos, he'd run out of shul, hop into his car, and go check factories that were under his supervision. I know that we have a neighbor here, Rav Yakubovitz. He pays people in different towns to come on Pesach on the last day in the afternoon to check different shops, to check if they started dealing with chametz before the holiday was out. So they just walk by casually, and they see what's going on, right? So that's a simple rabbanut supervision, and yet they send it to laboratories to check, and that's why they caught the worms that Rav Eliashiv's hechsher did not catch. So it's a little hard to say that in oversight one is better than the other. Sometimes the hechsher will claim, we have a mashgiach on campus. Okay, I'm not so convinced. You know, I went to places where the Mashgiach on campus was just not there. Or I came to the campus and I saw flies and worms in their hummus and in their falafel bowls, and that was a top hechsher. So when it comes to oversight, I have a hard time buying that one is really better than the other. Because I've seen too much going on, and it really depends on the God-fearingness of the person involved, and that's very hard to gauge. A beard and payas doesn't cut it. It's a real question. What type of person is he? How seriously does he take his work? How sharp is he in overseeing his work?
Do you eat at restaurants?
One step at a time. But when it comes to policies, then there is a distinct difference between them. Our recommendation here at Machon Meir is that the students from Machon Meir, for the first 10 years after they do tshuva and their time at Machon Meir, should eat every Orthodox hechsher there is. If it's an Orthodox hechsher, even if it's a regular Rabbanut out in Netanya or in the Golan or anywhere else, if it's a bona fide hechsher, eat it. Because it's so hard to get accustomed to eating kosher, you shouldn't take on any other stringencies. And if your host eats this hechsher, that hechsher, what difference does it make? You should be eating all of them too. And it's wrong to take on any stringencies and start saying, I'll only eat this and I'll only eat that. That's wrong. Because that's taking something which is not, which is just going to make it harder. It's not for this stage of the game. And people like to do it because it's a frummer than thou type of thing. You know, I don't eat his hechsher. I must be holier. That's not, you know, it's not the way it should be. There's a lot of politics when it comes to kashrus because it's a business. Everyone wants to make money. So of course, my hechsher is better than yours and my rabbi is bigger than yours and my hechsher does this stringency and blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's business. The fact of the matter is that a person who has done the tshuva process or giyur should take the first 10 years without any stringencies in this area. Eat every hechsher that's Orthodox. After 10 years, come back and I'll probably tell you to do it for another 10 years and then we'll talk. But if you want to consider taking on this stringency, let's talk about it in 10 years. Now is not the time. It's not a worthwhile stringency. I much rather you be careful about davening in shul, putting on tefillin every day, not talking lashon hara. There are so many biblical obligations that people miss, like saying Kriya Shema on time, like saying Kriya Shema morning and night, like making sure your tefillin are kosher, making sure your mezuzahs are kosher. You know, that's biblical. You'll start playing these games, this extra, that extra. Come on, it's not all of them are kosher. Once it has an Orthodox hechsher, from our perspective, it's kosher and you can eat it. And yet, if someone who is a God-fearing Jew invites you to their house, it's none of your business to start asking them, is it this hechsher or that hechsher? It's none of your business. They're a God-fearing person. You trust them. Gamarnu. They offer you a piece of cake. You eat it. They don't start asking questions, is it this, that, or the other thing. There's no reason to. And it's insulting. You don't trust me. You came to my house and you don't trust me. So, no, I don't think that's right. I think that a person should decide where he invests his energies, and I think this is a misguided place to invest one's energies. I'd sooner ask the person who doesn't eat that hechsher, is he as careful where he goes on the internet? Is he as careful what his eyes see? Because that's biblical, and this is like questionably anything. And what you're going in, and what a person's seeing in the internet, you want to be stringent? Go be stringent about that. But take on the higher stringency in Rimon, you know, which, what level of security one has to what one sees. That makes sense. There I could hear a person being stringent. But it's not as popular, right? I don't see that one getting asked so frequently.